Today's podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, let's get it going right here, right now. This is Diamond Conversations, and you are listening to episode number 7 of Diamond Conversations here on the Place to Be Nation podcasting network. If you didn't know by now, my name is Chad, and every single week we bring you a Diamond Conversation featuring somebody from the world of baseball. And this week, it is an absolute pleasure to welcome Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame inductee and a legendary Toronto Blue Jays announcer, Jerry Haworth, joining me to talk about his book, Hello Friends, Stories from My Life and Blue Jays Baseball, an absolute journey into the life of a broadcasting legend, somebody who spent many, many years as the color man for the Blue Jays, but transitioned over into the lead play-by-play role, calling iconic moment after iconic moment in Blue Jays history. And we get to talk about some of those iconic calls as well as some of those iconic moments and players in this Diamond Conversation with Jerry Haworth. Now, I'll tell you something, just kind of throwing my two cents in. Jerry could not be a nicer man. The whole planning process of getting the interview set up, he's been battling some health problems as of late and could not have been more accommodating with his schedule and trying to get the interview done from literally, I want to say, week two of the podcast. And for somebody who's trying to get a podcast off the ground, to have somebody of Jerry's stature be so accommodating and so willing to be a part of it, it made me feel very good and gave me a lot of confidence to continue the process of waiting for him to be ready. And when we finally got it done, this is an absolute gem of an interview. And I'm not going to really spoil too much of it. I want you to listen to it live and in living color. But just think about some of those teams the Toronto Blue Jays have produced over the last 35 years. And every single one of them, whether they were very good or very bad, Jerry called all those games, all those moments, the 92-93 Blue Jay World Champions, and then the little run they went on here a couple years ago in 2015 and 2016, including having the call for the Jose Bautista bat flip and the Edwin Encarnacion walk-off that just set Toronto on fire in 2016, and we get into all of it. But again, I don't want to spoil this, so we're going to get right over to the interview with Jerry Haworth. But if you can pick up the book, if you're looking for something to buy this holiday season, please go out and find Hello Friends, Stories from My Life and Blue Jays Baseball. It's an epic journey into the life of a great broadcasting announcer, somebody who, if you're trying to get into the business, study these classic guys. This is exactly what I do. I listen to how they carry themselves. I listen to how they broadcast. I listen to little intricacies of their routines, and I try to borrow a little bit if you can, and, you know, try to put it in your own repertoire. But this book gives you a great view into the life of a legendary Canadian broadcasting legend, a Canadian Baseball Hall of Famer. If you're a Blue Jays fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So let's wrap it up here nice. Let's get some plugs out of the way. Head on over to Facebook, like the page. It's Diamond Conversations Baseball Podcast. And then head on over to Twitter. You can like my personal page, which is Chad EMB, at Chad EMB, excuse me. And then the page for Diamond Conversations is at Diamond Converse 1. Appreciate everybody again every single week here on Place to Be Nation, trying to get it done, trying to deliver some really cool content, some really unique stuff. So if you're a baseball fan, you're dying for that hot stove talk, anything baseball related, strap in, because we're going to have a fun one here with Jerry Haworth. So let's hit the music and let's get on over to a Diamond Conversation with a broadcasting legend, Jerry Haworth. Back here on Diamond Conversations, and I'm so happy to be joined today by a Canadian baseball legend. We're going to be talking about his book, Hello Friends, Stories from My Life and Blue Jays Baseball. And we are joined by Canadian Baseball Hall of Famer, the one and only Jerry Haworth, joining us today on Diamond Conversations. Jerry, thank you so much for joining me.
Ian, my pleasure. Happy to do it. And it's been quite a journey from San Francisco, California, right here to Toronto.
It really has been. And getting to read your book and getting to hear your story and watching different things about your life, I find that to be fascinating, is that, you know, you grow up in the United States and you are a Canadian citizen and have lived there for so long. But kind of tell us about the journey and tell us about the book and kind of putting these stories down on paper and telling everybody the very fascinating story of your life.
Well, just as a quick overview, you know, I raised in the San Francisco Bay Area and spent my first 22 years there and graduated from the University of Santa Clara in 1968, spent a couple years as an officer in the U.S. Army in Frankfurt, Germany. Came back, went to law school for a year and decided to then leave law school and pursue something in sports. I didn't know what. I ended up being hired by Santa Clara to be their first ever fundraiser in the athletic department. And that led to raising money for the school, taping some football and basketball games to see if maybe there was a career in broadcasting. And from that point on, Ian, I went up to Tacoma, Washington with my wife, Mary. We had just gotten married. Broadcast 2 years of AAA baseball back to Salt Lake City for 3 years to give me a basic five-year platform where I became fundamentally sound calling AAA baseball games. Came up here in 1982. And been here for, we've lived here for 38 years, broadcast Blue Jays games for 36, and lived the first 35 years of my life in the States. So had somebody told me, Jerry, you'll end up living more outside the United States than Canada, I would have said no way, but it turned out yes way.
No, that's fantastic, and you have not only become, you know, a Canadian citizen, but you're like ingrained in Canadian baseball lore, and that's what I find to, you know, be really part of the interesting, just the whole overview of your story. You know, it's it comes from, you know, being a part of just the broadcasting world to then being part of the Blue Jays broadcasting team to then eventually taking over and being, you know, the top dog, the lead guy. What's the journey been like for you prior to your retirement to kind of build your career upwards and see the progression, how you, you know, matured as a broadcaster and learned along the way? Because, I mean, 30 years as a broadcaster for a professional sports team is that's one heck of an accomplishment.
Well, it was a lot of fun, and basically to answer your question, I also coached high school basketball up here for 25 years, and every year when I selected my 15 players, I'd have them sit right in front of me, and I would tell them very honestly, I would say, if somebody would have told me in high school when I played sports that someday, Jerry, you will be a major league broadcaster for 36 years, I would have said no way. But the answer is yes way, and there's two ways to do it. One, get as much education as you can past high school, and that's worked for me, going to the University of Santa Clara, as I said, for 4 years and getting my degree in economics. And then after that, follow your heart. And that's what I did. I went to law school basically, Ian, because my dad thought that would be something good to fall back upon. It wasn't my decision, but it was his, and I liked it. I enjoyed my first year there. But then later I said, no, I've got to follow my heart. I like sports. Let's get in the sports arena and see where that leads. And so I think that's what happened, because what happens is when you love something, and in this particular case it was sports, following your heart leads to fundraising, writing, broadcasting, and pretty soon you find something that you really want to do, which requires homework, preparation, a lot of dedication to your craft. But is that work? No. That's fun and play, because you're following your heart and your desires to become the very best. And when you talk about being recognized across Canada, one of the greatest satisfactions I've had in my career is to have people say, Jerry, I listened to you my whole life, and it was so much fun and entertaining and informative. It wasn't about me, but that gave me great feedback to know I was doing the right thing.
Yeah, oh, absolutely doing the right thing. And you made a great decision. You really did.
I did.
So looking back on, I want to turn to the book, because the book is really, it's a great journey, you know, through your life. You hold nothing back. You tell stories about your family growing up and some of the struggles you went through there. Was it hard to put those down on paper? Was it sort of cathartic to be able to share those and put them actually out there for the world?
Well, at first when I was asked to write a book nearing the end of my career in 2015, I said no to a couple of publishers and a friend of mine who wanted to ghostwrite a story of mine. And then I thought, no, I always grew up as a writer. In fact, one of my goals was to become a feature writer for Sports Illustrated. Writing became fairly easy for me as a young person, always has been. But what I did was, once I decided to write a book, I took my time. So after the 2015 season, in that off season, I just retired from coaching basketball. I spent that off season writing, to see if I could even do it, about 50,000 words. Took it to a publisher, and they said, keep going, this is pretty good. So after the 2016 season, where I again devoted my entire time to my career, which is being a Blue Jays broadcaster, I wrote 60,000 words. And then after the 2017 season, when I had broadcast my last season due to health issues, then I took the 110,000 words, edited it down to 100,000 words, gave it to the publisher, and the next day he said, we love it, let's sign a contract. And that's where it all began, because what I wanted to do was share my stories, be honest and open, and at the same time have people, especially young people, I always tell parents, buy the book for your sons, your daughters, and the first seven chapters, if you don't read any more than the first 50,000 words, they're about me and some of the things you talked about and struggles that I had. And don't give up and keep pursuing your dreams, and let the reality then take care of itself. And I was very happy to do that, and I was very happy to have that platform to share my life with others so they could take advantage of some of the things that I did.
Now, writing about the baseball must have been the easy part of the story, but did you have any trepidations of sharing some of the past with your family and some of the things that you lived through as a child?
No, not really. And in fact, initially when I thought about writing a book, I declined to do it because I thought, if I'm too honest, I don't want it to offend people or whatever.
Right.
Later, I felt that I could be constructively critical, be honest and open, and it ties into something I did in my career as a broadcaster. When I was going to be constructively critical about a player, manager, or coach, I would pretend as I talked about that on the air that that person was right next to me, so that the next day, if that person came to me and said, you said this about me, I could say, yes, I did. I said it directly on the air and to you, and now I'm going to repeat what I said. So that way it took away from being personal, nasty, mean, vindictive. No, I didn't want to do that. So because I'd already said it to that person, I had no issues going in the clubhouse the next day.
Is that hard to kind of hold back some of those things or present it to somebody? You know, we always hear talk of, you know, you see a story that says, you know, the management's not happy with the broadcaster for what they said on the air. Do you kind of put that through a filtering system in your head before you say something, or you just let it naturally get out there?
Well, no, I think you do have to think about what you say. There's sometimes people say things too much off the cuff, and then they don't say they're sorry about it.
Right.
And you can't do that. So I always tried to be as diplomatic and fair as I could be. People knew I was the Blue Jays broadcaster, but I also highlighted the game and the other team and their other players and the plays that were made. And many times on the air I said, the Blue Jays did not lose this game tonight. The other team won it.
Right, right.
So that was not an issue for me. And when I did say things, the few times that I had to be constructively critical, again, I pretended that player was right next to me so that if I was going to see him face-to-face, this is how I would address it. And a lot of times I hear broadcasters go off the deep end. I think to myself, whoops, they went a little bit too far right there. It'll be interesting to see what the reaction is. And I never got into that situation because I'd already fairly and objectively said my point.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, as a longtime New York Mets fan, you know, we've always had I always felt like every Met announcer in Met history is more critical on the Mets than they were on anybody else. And as a fan, you're sitting there like, hey, you know, like maybe mm-hmm. the other team does something wrong. But then you listen to other markets and you get to hear everybody's different style. And I like, from what I've listened to of yours, you know, and the research I've done, I love the way you had your overall presentation. And it is very much of that professional broadcasting sense in that you are going to call it down the middle. You're going to call out people that need to be called out. And I love that as a listener, as somebody who studies broadcasting, I love that. Have you ever had any instances where you had to tell somebody to maybe tone that down because you don't want them to maybe overshadow what's going on inside the game, and you don't kind of want have them put themselves over? You want them to, you know, keep the almost like the story straight as to what's going on in the field.
No, I didn't do that. What I did do, and I always encourage young broadcasters to send me their work. I like listening to it and then sending them back my comments. But what I did tell them is, you be you. Because this worked for me to not be a homer, but to be fair and honest. And at the same time, people knew over 36 years, that's the Blue Jays announcer, Jerry Howarth, and we follow him. There was no issues about that. I think credibility really has to be a factor, too, where if you're fair like that, the way I was, people appreciate that. And they know, too, that you're being fair and highlighting the game, not the team. The team
right.
is going to be highlighted no matter what. But now the next person that comes along, they might be a shouter. They might be super aggressive. You talk about Mets announcers. Gary Cohen's a good friend of mine. So whatever happens, you be you. And then if you're comfortable with that and you're following your heart and your personality comes through no matter what that is, that's the way you should broadcast. And your fans will identify with that. And then they'll say, that's our guy. And I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, he's a gem, and he's been there for over 30 years at this point, or approaching, or it's just over 30 years that he's been a Mets announcer in some capacity. And, you know, he's the voice of a generation of Mets fans, and that is so cool because that's what you are, too, to the Blue Jay fans. And I remember as a kid, I would go through the dial, you know, at night, and I'd try to see if I could get other, you know, AM stations from around the world. You know, you wait till late at night when that signal's a little stronger, and you try to grab people. And I do remember grabbing Toronto games, but I don't remember specifically hearing you, but I just love going back and listening to some of those classic clips. And obviously where I was focused on this last little bit of research I was doing was the 2015 playoffs and the Jose Bautista bat flip home run. Such an iconic home run, such an iconic call, the bat flip that literally changed the bat flip because now everybody does it. Take us back, if you can, to that moment when that ball is just sailing off of Jose's bat and flying into the stands up there at the Sky Dome. I'll still call it the Sky Dome, but just take us back to that moment, if you can, and what was going through your head as that ball was off the bat.
Well, what was interesting about that half, what was interesting about that whole inning, and this is why it made it so dramatic. First of all, it's the division series. It's the deciding game. And in the top of the seventh inning, the Blue Jays were ahead by a run. And then there was an issue with a runner at third and one out about Russ Martin, the catcher, throwing the ball simply back to the mound. But Shin-Soo Chu with the Rangers had just inadvertently in the batter's box, left-handed batter, stuck his hands out to kind of stretch his arms, and Martin's throw hit his bat. So the ball rolls up along third, Odor scores, and the umpire denies it, so the Blue Jays still have the lead. But then later, the umpire changed that call and allowed Odor to score, and all of a sudden, mayhem erupted at the Rogers Center. And people were throwing bottles of water and beer on the field. Well, my point is, in the top of the inning, when that inning started, Ian, to the point where the inning ended in the bottom of the seventh inning on Bautista's bat flip home run for the lead 6-3 after they went in trailing 3-2, that entire one inning took 53 minutes to play. And that's why my call was so emphatic about drive deep left field. The call was simply, yes, sir, there she goes. And that's how everybody felt in the building. Yeah, Rangers, take that. There she goes. And I think it was more for the umpire, too, who had reversed the call. So it was one of the most interesting and controversial innings in playoff history that took nearly an hour. And the bat flip home run culminated it for, if you want to say this, the home team, the good guys, overcalling the call itself with that home run. And the Blue Jays winning that division series. Had it gone the other way, I think fans up here would have been still wounded by the call. And I was happy, too, for the umpire that it didn't have to go any further than that home run. And that was the end of it.
That was such an emotional game, inning, you know, the whole thing. And then the little skirmish that would happen after the home run. And, you know, just the emotion riding high. And obviously, you know, the Odor and Bautista little scuffle that they had. So it's that rivalry, that series between the two of those teams. It's just looking back at 2015 and how that team was. It's fascinating. It really was a great little stretch there for Toronto baseball. Was that like a renaissance for you as a broadcaster to see those teams, those 2015, 2016 teams kind of reemerge as a powerhouse?
Oh, yes, no doubt about it. In fact, when I look back at my career covering the 92 and 93 World Series here, the Canadian fans were great, but they would applaud when things just kind of were naturally a time to applaud. And you'd get to the ninth inning and two down, and the fans would start to rise and cheer, looking for the final out. Well, in 2015 and 2016, a younger crowd, 34 to 45, started to emerge. And I'd have to say, in my career, I never heard crowds as loud and spontaneous as those crowds here in 2015 and 2016. They would start to applaud from the July 2015 trade deadline when David Price came here and Troy Tulowitzki came here and LaTroy Hawkins, et cetera, et cetera. They would start to applaud when the pitcher came out 20 minutes beforehand to go out to the bullpen to begin to warm up. And then in the first inning, and then the fourth inning, and the fifth inning. That had never happened before. I'd never seen crowds like that before. And it was, for me, a celebrated 2 years, 2015 and 2016, where with a hit here or there and a break here or there, you're looking at two more World Series appearances.
Absolutely. And those, that 92 and 93 team, we're going to talk about that briefly too. You know, those are teams that I grew up watching, like looking at this collection of superstars and Hall of Famers and being like, wow, how was this group on one team and not win 10 World Series with the amount of talent that they had? But obviously the story that I feel needs to be told out of the 92 and 93 teams is 92, where you were ready to call that first ever Blue Jays World Series win, and you so graciously stepped aside and let your broadcast partner of so many years, Tom Cheek, step in and make the final call. Again, reading about it, you know, watching the interviews you've done about it, it's such a just a lovable story for you, and just goes to show you the professionalism you have and the respect you had for the late Tom Cheek. Kind of take us through that decision that you made and explain to the listeners, you know, what was going through your head as you so graciously handed over that final call to Tom.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that, Ian. It was game six in Atlanta. Blue Jays led the World Series 3-2. And going to the bottom of the ninth inning, the Blue Jays led 2-1. So I'm really ready to hear Tom call the final out, and the Blue Jays win their first ever World Series in Canada. But Atlanta tied it up off Tom Hanke 2-2, and the game went to the 10th, which was Tom's inning. After that, it was every other inning. So in the 11th, I took over and had the good fortune of seeing a Blue Jays Dave Winfield double home two for the lead 4-2. Well, as we took a commercial break, I said to myself, Jerry, do the right thing. Tom has been here since day one. He's done all these consecutive games, and I came in 1982 as opposed to 1977. So when we came back, I said, ladies and gentlemen, I've had the pleasure of calling Dave Winfield's two-run double for the lead, 4-2. Here's my partner, Tom Cheek, to take you the rest of the way. And when I looked at his face, it just glowed. He was so happy. Jerry, thank you very much. Here's the first pitch of the bottom of the 11th inning. And, of course, they won it. And Tim Lynn to Carter on the bunted ball by Otis Nixon, and the Blue Jays won their first ever World Series. And I tell people, too, if you can, try to do the right thing. And I was so happy. In fact, I was happier, Ian, that he made the call than if I had made it.
Yes, that's so gracious and so phenomenal. And in a business where your voice is immortalized on many, many clips and highlight reels and video retrospectives, it's such a testament to you as a professional that you did that. And I respect it even more as a broadcaster as I do as a listener and a fan. So it's such a great story. But that team that, 92, 93, those stars, you had your Dave Winfield, Ricky Henderson, Paul Molitor, Jack Morris, Joe Carter, all these amazing stars kind of coming together at the right time. Watching that team come together, did you see a World Series in the imminent future? And actually a 2-year World Series run for that team? Because with the talent, hey, it was all there. The table was set, as they say.
Yes, and the reason I did see that, the biggest star among all those stars you just mentioned was general manager Pat Gillick.
Yeah.
He's in the Hall of Fame at Cooperstown for Absolutely. A good reason. I always said on the radio publicly during the broadcast 2 or 3 times a year, the real competition is not on the field. It's upstairs among the general managers in Major League Baseball. And Pat Gillick showed why he's a Hall of Famer. He knew what was going on in every clubhouse in Major League Baseball. He knew players' hearts, desires, attitude, positive outlook, and those are the players he acquired. And so when you began to see that, you realize it's only a matter of time. And to this day, Pat Gillick won those 2 World Series with the players that he put on the field. And then when you look at other teams, whether they're struggling or not, it's a general, usually a direct reflection of who their general manager is. So you put it all together, and it was so sweet to see. And then the ultimate, and I love telling stories on the air. As a broadcaster, It was never about statistics. It was more storytelling. And my favorite story is that when Joe Carter hit that walk-off World Series home run, it was only the second time in the history of Major League Baseball that that has happened. 1960, Bill Mazeroski stepped into a pitch in the bottom of the ninth inning at Forbes Field in Pittsburgh, a walk-off World Series home run. The shortstop that day for him and his Pirates was Dick Schofield. 33 years later, when Joe hits that walk-off World Series home run, in the mayhem and the celebration home plate, in uniform, is the Blue Jays shortstop, Dick Schofield Jr.
That's right.
What are the odds that only twice something like that would happen in Major League Baseball history? Once with a father, 33 years later with his son.
That's unbelievable. And just again, you look at it, it's like going through your baseball cards and seeing all these stars, one after the other, and these guys that were integral parts of other teams throughout the years just came together, and that is so amazing that Toronto was able to have back-to-back years, and obviously the Joe Carter home run, another iconic moment, and a Tom Cheek call, which we all know by heart, touch them all, Joe, you'll never hit a bigger home run. I mean, you hear it ringing in your head, you see it all the time, and just, you know, I don't know if a lot of people realize all the magical baseball moments that have come out of Toronto. And you and I, as we were kind of getting together this interview and chatting back and forth via email, you had mentioned your joy for the Washington Nationals this year and their victory, their 2019 World Series win, because of the people that you know that are part of the Nationals organization. And I thought about it for a few minutes. I said, you know what? Not only is it that you know people in the organization, but this is almost like an extended victory for Canada because it is a descendant of the Montreal Expos. So kind of talk about this team and the friends you have on the team right now, the organization, and is it truly an extension of that Expos franchise and giving them a World Series title that they never had?
Well, there's no question about that. The Expos came into Major League Baseball in 1969 as an expansion team, and then the Blue Jays in 1977. And then in 1994, in August, I think it was August 12th, when the strike occurred and baseball ended, the best record in baseball was held by the Montreal Expos, or there might have been a third straight World Series championship in Canada, the first 2 years, of course, with the Blue Jays. So in 2004, the Expos concluded their last season in Montreal, moved to Washington. But for me, the reason why I really identified with Washington, their manager is a great friend of mine, Dave Martinez, who is, in his own quiet way, was a Blue Jay, in fact, still owns the record. When he was traded from the Rangers to the Blue Jays, he began his Blue Jays career with a 21-game hitting streak that is still by far and away a Blue Jays record. So I got to know him and his modesty and humility, and then he was a longtime bench coach with another great friend of mine, Joe Maddon, at that time manager of the Chicago Cubs and now the Angels. And then the first Brazilian ever to play Major League Baseball was catcher Yan Gomes, and he did it with the Blue Jays. And I remember calling his first hits and first home runs, and what a sweet person he was. But when you're a catcher, you've got to be tough and mentally tough and disciplined. Yan Gomes was all of that. So there he is, catching the staff with the Washington Nationals, as managed by Dave Martinez. And in broadcasting, it's a small fraternity. We all know each other. And the radio broadcaster for Washington is Charlie Slows, who I met when he first came up as a young announcer with the Tampa Bay Rays. So when they won it, not only did they win it, I was so happy for them. Every game was won by the visiting team, which has never happened in professional sports, let alone Major League Baseball in the World Series. So it was quite a World Series for me to follow. And for me, it was always about people. And I was rooting for the people, Martinez and Gomes and Slows, and it worked out very well, thank you.
Well, living in the Washington, D.C. area, I could tell you the fan base gets a lot of criticism for, you know, maybe sometimes lack of support, but they showed up in droves and in numbers and really just set the DMV on fire over the last few months. I mean, I was there on September 1st when the Mets were in town to play the Nationals, and the crowd wasn't there, but I'll tell you what, when that celebration was heading down toward the Capitol a few weeks ago, they came out, and it was great support, and who knows what is to be for this Washington Nationals crew, whether or not they repeat. They might be losing some guys, not yet, as we're recording this, but you never know. But how do you kind of view that now in your retirement? Do you root more for people that you know? Do you root for the Blue Jays? Do you kind of take an interest in just the game? Like, where do you kind of fall in that discussion?
Well, I'm kind of in the middle there. the one team and the only team that I really root for is a team that I saw when I was 8 years old growing up in San Francisco. My dad would take me to Kezar Stadium. He was a 49ers season ticket holder, and I became the ardent 49er fan and saw five Super Bowls. And had I been their broadcaster, it would have been very difficult to not be a homer because that was my team. But overall, now in retirement, I enjoy letting everything unfold in front of me, and I'll follow the Blue Jays. In this case, I was rooting for Dave Martinez and Yan Gomes. But it's something that when I look back at my career, no regrets upon leaving. I have fun now doing other things. My wife and I have been married 48 years. We have two sons and three grandsons. I play a lot of duplicate bridge, which I will do right after this interview here, which is a wonderful retirement game because it's a game much like my career. You do homework, you prepare, you try to learn a game that you never fully learn. You have a partner, you try to beat everybody in the room, and it's a three-hour game. The only difference being in one career, I talked all the time, and in bridge, nobody talks. So I've been very blessed to have a blessed life, Ian, and in retirement, I enjoy my retirement, which will come in February, be 2 years. And I always, people have asked me, Jerry, what's your philosophy of life? And I say two short things. One, enjoy the moment as we are here on this podcast. And number two, you're not promised tomorrow. And I have a lot of benchmarks in my life where people have preceded me with untimely passing away. And so that's what I do, and I've been happy to do that.
Now, have you been back in the booth since you retired? Have you visited the Blue Jays and stepped in the put the headphones on since you retired?
No, I haven't done that, and I wanted the follow-up broadcasters to do their thing. But what I have done the last two seasons in 2018 and 2019, I've gone out first game of every series for batting practice. So I'm on the field at 3:45, and I visit with the Blue Jays, the players, manager, coaches, the other team's radio and TV broadcasters. And then about 6 o'clock, I get in my car, drive home early, beat the traffic. And so I'm still out on the field 30, 35 times a year. But that's it, and no broadcasting, been there, done that, and let other people do that.
Well, you sound great, you know, and I could just hand you, I feel like I want to hand you a lineup card and have you read off some of those names because you still sound like you could step behind the microphone and do your thing. And, you know, again, I just, as we head to the wrap-up here, I just really appreciate you coming on. And before we go, I just want to throw a couple little rapid-fire, you know, favorites at you, see what you can kind of give me off the top of your head. So we've talked about some of those iconic moments, the bat flip, you know, the first World Series, seeing the Carter home run. Give me a moment that a fan may not realize or not know of that you think is a standout in your mind as one of your favorite all-time Blue Jays moments.
Well, actually, it was the follow-up year to Jose Bautista's bat flip home run. That was in 2015. And in 2016, the Blue Jays were the wild card team and the Orioles were the second wild card team. So, of course, they have the wild card game in Toronto because the Blue Jays had the little better record, I think, by a game. And it goes extra innings. And in the bottom of the 11th inning, Edwin Encarnacion came up in a tie ball game with a couple men on. And I had the pleasure of calling his walk-off playoff wild card game home run. And my call was simply, yes, sir, the Blue Jays are going to Texas. And that's where they were going. The winner was going to play the Rangers out in Arlington. And that's those two swings, Bautista's in 15, and the next year in the playoffs, Edwin's walk-off home run in the wild card game, they're two of the most memorable swings in Blue Jays history. And when I look at those home runs, you'd have to put them in the top five overall.
Now, how about, I'm not going to say a favorite because I don't want you to play favorites, but give me a player that impressed you the most. Maybe that, again, somebody we might not know of off the top of our head. You know, we know of all those big Hall of Famers in the 92-93 team, Bautista and Encarnacion. Give me somebody that the fans may not realize or remember and have to look up. Give me an underrated player in Blue Jays history.
Well, that question I get asked a lot. Who is your favorite Blue Jay? And my favorite Blue Jay is someone who started that 92 team, who also came up in 1985 and helped the Blue Jays closing games to reach their first ever playoff scenario, Tom Henke. Tom is my favorite Blue Jay on and off the field. Why? Because off the field, he grew up in Taos, Missouri, a little town of 780 people. He was a bricklayer. There's an old saying that I like to use, you can't hide talent. And the Texas Rangers found him in Taos, Missouri. He eventually made it to the major leagues with the Rangers. For whatever reason, they didn't really particularly care for him. They sent him back to AAA, and Pat Gillick, Hall of Famer, the general manager, he steals him from the Rangers, and then he goes on to save over 300 games. And in his last year with the St. Louis Cardinals and Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa, he saved 36 of 38 games. What did he do? He retired. He and his wife, Kathy, have four kids, the third Amanda born with Down syndrome. And La Russa went over to Taos and pleaded with him in the offseason, Tom, don't retire. You're still so good. You helped us save 36 games of 38. And Tom said, no, Tony, I love my family. It's time to stop, and I want to now devote all my time to my children and my wife, Kathy. He, for me, was my favorite Blue Jay.
That's awesome. The Terminator, how can we forget? Just what a classic.
The Terminator, yeah.
That's right, what a classic look. He just he was so good. That's a great one. That's an awesome one. I'm glad that you said that, Tom Hanke. Because I just actually had on an author who was talking about the 1985 season from the New York perspective, talking about the Mets and the Yankees, but the Blue Jays were in the discussion there in 85. And, you know, that was probably in your tenure, that's probably the first closest they had been to really that World Series crown was the 85, and I believe 86, too. They were just as good.
Well, in 85, they won 99 games, which is still a Blue Jays record, and they went to the playoffs. And at that time, it had been best 3 out of 5 in the championship series. There was only one series. And they had 3-1 in Kansas City, and they lose the next 3 games. I remember visiting with my friend, Royals catcher John Watson, who later managed the Royals.
Yeah.
John and I were great friends, and I said to him, what do you think? Blue Jays are ahead 3-1. He said, Jerry, in baseball, a 3-game winning streak is nothing. So not only did that apply in that series, they go to the World Series, they're down 3-1 to the Cardinals, and what do? Put together another 3-game winning streak. So that's why I always say, as a broadcaster, a player, it doesn't matter, do your best and let the results take care of themselves. That's all you can do. And when I coached basketball for 25 years, I told our players, you give me your best, we'll take the results. And we played for a couple of city championships, but we also had one season where we were 0-19. It was one of the best teams I ever coached because we stayed together and got better and better and better at the very end. So let the results take care of themselves. Give it your best.
Oh, absolutely, and that's a great way to head into the wrap-up here. Again, the book is Hello Friends, Stories from My Life in Blue Jays Baseball. I mean, I just had an absolute ball reading it and getting to just learn about your life, your career, and just the Blue Jays. And, you know, I always felt a kinship to the Expos because my favorite all-time player is Gary Carter. But learning more about the Blue Jays was very cool. And I appreciate the back and forth you and I have had over the last few weeks and the absolute joy I've had of having you on the podcast. And it's first couple of shows here has been an amazing just highlight. So if people want to pick up the book, obviously you can get it through Barnes & Noble. You can get it through Amazon. It's an ECW Press book. They have made amazing sports books for so many years. And I can't even tell you if I go through my books how many ECW Press books I have. But please, Jerry, if you can, send the listeners someplace that they want to look up more about the book, more about your career, and if you have anything else going on. I know you're happily in retirement. And as we end 2019 here, just anything else you can share with the fans, the floor is yours.
Well, no, I think the best thing I'm going to do is say thank you, Ian. Follow your heart for others to listen to your guests, and that's what life is all about.
Well, again, my absolute pleasure. It has been just a joy, and I hope you nothing but the best health, happiness, and continued. I'd wish you a happy Thanksgiving, but I don't know if you're following the Canadian Thanksgiving these days. So,
well, we get both up here.
Okay.
We get two Thanksgivings. We get one in the first 10 days in October, and we get one coming up here this weekend. So talk about being blessed, huh?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceofNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceofNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceofNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.